Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. Today, we have Professor Julian Vasquez-Heilich back, and we're going to kick off the first part of a series on Teach for America. Many of you probably don't know about Teach for America, especially if you're not in the education community. Teach for America is one of the most important, most powerful, influential organizations on the corporate side of the war on public education. It has a 20-plus year history. It has evolved from one level of potential threat to public education to its current stage of a real present danger to the future of American public education as we have known it. Our guest today, Dr. Heilich, is one of the most foremost persons who know about this organization, both as a scholar, a researcher, a practitioner, and who have seen Teach for America in its day-to-day operation. He has been in touch with many of students who were considering going into Teach for America, students who are currently, they're no longer students, they're acting as teachers in Teach for America, and students who have completed their term with Teach for America and who are now coming out and having statements to make about the organization. Those of you who've been with us previously, you know that Dr. Heilich is an award-winning researcher, teacher. He is currently an associate professor of educational policy and planning and African-American diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin. And I messed up that word again, Julian. He is also faculty affiliate at the Center for the Study of, he is a biggie. And as I said before, if I try and read all of his accomplishments, we wouldn't have any time for our show. So I'm going to just leave off there and then put in occasionally a little bit more about his professional expertise. With that, hi, Julian. Welcome back to the War Report.
Glad to be here, and I'm glad you have me back on. And it's been quite a whirlwind weekend, but really glad to be here.
Well, you just opened the door for me to say that for the past 2 weeks plus, Professor Heilich had gone around, I won't say around the world, but a large portion of the world on a vacation. He came back, I think, maybe Friday, only to go to New York, where he was on MSNBC yesterday for a two-hour show dealing with education. I don't even know where you are today, or whether that you're back home in Texas or still in New York, but he is here with us. I was kind of worried whether or not he would appear with us because he has been this world traveler and et cetera and exposed to huge audiences all around the world to come back and appear on the War Report.
Oh, no, really glad to be here.
How was your trip?
So, the thing is, you know, I was basically in another time, you know, on the exact opposite time zone of the United States. So, you know, when you come back from being, basically at the same time zone as India, day is night and night is day. And it's, you know, it takes some time to get adjusted. But as you said, you know, when I got back, I basically packed my suitcase and headed to New York. But there was a 7-hour delay into New York. So basically, I arrived in my hotel about 1:30, and then I had to be up about 7 to head to the Rockefeller Center to do Melissa Harris Perry. But it's been a whirlwind. I'm glad to be here, and as you know, and as folks probably know, I'm probably Teach for America enemy number one, and that's because I think it's very important that we talk about Teach for America, that we encourage them to reform their reform. As reformers, I think that Teach for America should be the most interested in reform rather than the least interested in reform. And over the last, you know, Teach for America was born, you know, in Wendy Kopp's dorm room, you know, several decades ago. And over those decades, Teach for America hasn't changed all that much. You know, essentially, Teach for America sends teachers into the most impoverished communities, whether they be rural communities, whether they be Black and Latino, quote-unquote hard-to-staff schools. That model has not changed very much over the last several decades. And I think what's really important about this, yesterday in Melissa Harris Perry, one of the things is that, you know, on shows like MSNBC, you have about 12 seconds to make your point. So I just wanted to expand a little bit more on one point that I made in the third segment, which was what we used to call discrimination, we now call civil rights. Now, the examples that I gave, you know, on the show was first I talk about high-stakes tests. And the thing is, we used to talk about how high-stakes tests were discriminatory towards African-American and Latino students because of the way that they were designed, and that was a really big issue. But now we're talking, instead of talking about how these tests are discriminatory, we're talking about the achievement gap as if that is a civil rights issue that needs to be remedied, which of course it does, but we're no longer talking about how these tests at their base are discriminatory. And what's interesting is I was doing a little background work years ago, 20 years ago, in the case Deborah P. Turlington, Black and Latinos sued the state of Florida saying that the test had a disparate impact on Latinos. And at the time, the judges said, quote, that high-stakes tests would essentially eradicate racism. That was the thinking of the court decades ago. Of course, we know that high-stakes tests have not eradicated racism. We talked about vouchers. Of course, we know that vouchers first came into prominence in the United States after the Brown decision, because in the South, they were using vouchers to promote all deliberate slowness of resegregation. So that's another example of discrimination. Now we're calling vouchers civil rights, choice civil rights. We used to talk, if we were sending students to schools that were worse than our traditional schools, schools that are more segregated, which we know that about charters, we know that they're on average perform worse, we know on average the charters are more segregated, but we call choice civil rights, but it doesn't add up. I would call that discriminatory if we're sending our Black and Latino kids to schools that are performing worse and are more segregated. And then finally, I concluded with Teach for America, which is sort of the segue, which is that we used to think about unqualified teachers, teachers that are not certified, and sending those to Black and Latino kids, we consider that to be discriminatory. But what Teach for America has done is they've changed that conversation so that all of a sudden, sending underqualified teachers, uncertified teachers, teachers with basically no training in curriculum, pedagogy, classroom management, to teach special ed, to teach ELLs, all of a sudden, sending those kids to Black and brown kids and to poor white kids has become civil rights. So what I think is really interesting is if you look across these several policy reforms, what we used to call discrimination, folks, the neoliberals, others, they're now calling that civil rights, and it just doesn't add up.
You know, that was a fantastic summary. But now, we need to go back and talk about what Teach for America is, and maybe throw in some history about its founder.
Sure.
You know her background and the history. Let's lay that out for the public who doesn't know. So beginning with, let's start with her. Tell me about her.
So I'm not going to say that I'm an expert on everything Wendy Kopp. I'm not going to say that. But the Wendy Kopp, if I'm not mistaken, went to Princeton University. As a part of her senior thesis, she developed an idea that they would send teachers who had some summer training into hard-to-staff schools. That was the original idea. And Teach America started very small. Even today, with all of the conversations about Teach America, they're still half of 1%. But that, even though they're a small percentage of the total number of teachers in the United States, they have an outsized influence because behind the scenes, Teach America fast-tracks their two-year teachers into a variety of leadership positions, whether it be John White in Louisiana or Michelle Rhee at Students First or Cammy up in New Jersey. And so essentially it started as a small, and you know, really I'll be honest with you.
Julian, let me insert something here.
Sure, no problem.
She started, she did go to Princeton, and in her senior year she wrote this thesis. She was supposed to develop an argument around some notion of policy. According to her story, once she got into this thing, she had this great epiphany that led her to develop basically a business model that would transform public education from this failing public institution to this thriving institution. Then, after she completed her thesis, she had applied for various jobs in the business community and didn't get employed. She then applied for a teaching position in New York. And the reason I bring this up is that when I started researching her background, this notion of I can't get employment in the field that I've trained for, I can't get into the top companies, well, I'll go into teaching. Anyone can go into teaching. And certainly, me coming from Princeton, they should eat me up to get me into the system. That, to me, was a major revelation that I think spoke volumes about this person's character, this person's perspective, and I think had a tremendous influence on the development of her Teach for America program. Okay, now, fast forward. There's something also that I thought maybe you would touch on, that there is a Texas connection with Teach for America. When Wendy started her effort to promote her new idea of a sort of like teacher corps based on the Peace Corps model and decided that she needed, I think it was stated, $2.5 million to finance her operation, she went to Texas to get the money. Do you know who she went to?
No, this is all interesting material. Where did she go?
Ross Perot. You're saying, Well, Ross Perot, as we know, the billionaire who wanted to be president, but he also had a business neoliberal philosophy, and education was one of the areas in which he wanted to transform. She went to the right person and supposedly got much of her funding, if not all of the $2.5 million that she wanted, and hence she started her organization. I will come back to this later in terms of making connections. What I think I tried to just do and what you've done so far, we're painting dots. And in order to be able to paint dots, you must first see the dots. So we're right now, we are seeing dots, we're painting them so other people can see them, and then later, hopefully, we'll start making some connections between the dots. So,
right.
With my interjection there, go back to where you were and complete the thought that you were laying out.
Well, that's all really interesting background that that I hadn't read before. I think that before we go there, maybe we could connect some dots. One of the things, when I wrote a New York Times piece about this a year or two ago, what I said is that the way Teach for America was currently structured was essentially like a temp agency, like a manpower type of organization, because Teach for America core members are essentially tourists in the communities that they go to, because the vast majority of them, between 60% and 80% of them, are gone after 3 to 4 years. And, you know, Teach for America has data, and it's a long conversation about Teach for America's data that they cite. But the bottom line with Teach for America's data is that they've never released it to the public. You know, Teach for America will cite lots and lots of data. And so, and just another quick sort of caveat to this, in the Teach for America brief that we wrote in 2014, we also wrote one in 2010 for the National Education Policy Center. But one of the things that we wrote in the 2014 brief was that we created a citizens resource template. Because Teach for America likes to talk about their data and they don't release that data to the public, what we encourage the public to do is to gather data on their own, because the data on teacher retention and these sorts of things, it varies community to community. So to not paint a broad brushstroke, we think it's important for communities to gather that data independently of Teach for America from the individual districts to get a feel for what the retention of their teachers really is, what they're actually spending on Teach for America, et cetera, et cetera. But what's really interesting is that, you know, Teach for America, in that New York Times piece, back to sort of my main stream of thought, I talked about how they have this high turnover rate, but Teach for America also has special deals that they've created with different graduate schools, whether it be law schools or ed schools. They have special deals with the investment banks. And so going into this, core members often think of this as a resume builder. This is not a long-term commitment for them. This is a temporary thing. And I think that's really problematic, because the thing is that in these communities, we know, and the thing is that one of the comments that you made just a few minutes ago was about the failing public school system. And Melissa Harris Perry took this up on her show yesterday, saying, you know, that she grew up in a wealthy Princeton community, and the public schools in her community were not failing. And that's really the issue that's sort of left unsaid. The issue is that our public system writ large is not failing. In fact, where it's failing is in poor communities, because the comment that I made yesterday, Melissa Harris Perry, was that you don't have to go as far as Singapore or Finland to see high-quality schools. You just have to go across the tracks. And one of the comments that I made off camera to one of the other guests was, you know, oftentimes in college, I remember people would ask you what high school you went to. And based on what high school you went to, folks will make judgments about you based on the high school you went to. And the reason why those stereotypes work is because we as a society know that we provision education differently for people based on income. One of the piece that Tremaine did on the Philadelphia public schools, kids are well aware of the fact that they're going to get Teach America teachers and they're going to leave. They know that their school is quote unquote low performing. They know that their football stadium is nowhere near as nice as the $60 million football stadium in the suburbs of Dallas. Kids know that society has decided to provision education differently for kids, and we're well aware of this. And they know that that's why they're getting Teach America teachers, and those teachers are only going to be temporary. So in many ways, Teach America actually perpetuates these inequalities in society for these kids, because these kids, they know that they're getting the short end of the stick from society on purpose. It's not an invisible hand. It's a very visible and purposeful, purposely structured approach that our nation has taken to get provisioning education very poorly for certain kids.
Well, Julian, you're right on as usual, but that's the horse before the cart.
Sure.
Why are our students getting the Teach for America tent? The program itself.
Mm-hmm.
When is program based on, quote, the Peace Corps model was that I will recruit the best and brightest from the Ivy League school. That's discrimination to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what their majors were, because that's irrelevant. These people are the best and they're the brightest. Two, I will train them for 5 weeks during the summer at my summer institute. That would be sufficient training to put them in the areas of cities, rural areas where poverty, violence, discrimination, you name it, wreaks havoc every day and almost every aspect of those children's lives. I'm going to take my 5-week wonders and put them in those classrooms with only 5 weeks. I keep saying the same thing, only 5 weeks of training.
Right.
Education and the freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year of college and education, and they're going to do the job. Now, my temps, they don't call themselves temps, of course. They're only going to give me, or the organization, a 2-year commitment. So, we're going to go in, we're going to displace veteran teachers who've been teaching for decades maybe, teachers who majored in education as undergraduates, who have probably gone on to get graduate credit and degrees, as well as experience, and we're going to displace them.
Right. And what's interesting, let me just interject a quick comment here, which is that Teach for America's newest thing is, you know, President Obama has talked about how we need more black teachers, how we need more black male teachers, right? Right, but what they don't talk about, and Mark Nyasin recently did a piece for the BAT, this really interesting education news piece, but what they don't talk about is, who does Teach for America think they're displacing in Newark, New Orleans, and Chicago? They're displacing veteran teachers of color. In fact, in New Orleans, if I'm not mistaken, they displaced 600 or 700 African American teachers. So while Teach for America is talking about, diversifying the teacher workforce, the workforce that they're bringing in is displacing the African American teachers that they're trying to increase the diversity of the workforce. So it's almost like they're talking out of two sides of their mouth.
They are talking out of both sides of their mouth. We have a caller, let me get this in before she comes on. Just today, Diane Ravitch did a piece on this very topic about the displacement of teachers of color with white teachers in the minority community. So having said that, I'll come back to that, but let's take our caller. Caller, are you there?
Hello, I'm calling from Houston, home of Teach for America.
Our first caller was from Houston.
say?
I'm on a roll with Houston.
I do not live in the Houston School District. I'm in an adjoining district, which is the third largest in Texas. And we do not use Teach for America. We develop our own teachers. We have 112,000 students, and demographically close, mirrors the state population. One thing I wanted to say about Teach for America is that I resent my district is a considered property poor. Yet at the state level, my tax dollars, state tax dollars, are going to support Teach for America.
Right.
And that disturbs me, particularly because even the state has done a report saying that Teach for America is not effective, except somewhat in the area of math. So mm-hmm. that disturbs me, as I want all kids mm-hmm. to have access to high-quality teachers.
Right. And what's interesting is that, you know, two sessions ago, the Texas legislators cut $6 billion from education in Texas. But Teach for America still got their $10 million. And I'm not trying to be partisan with this particular comment, and I try very hard not to be partisan on my blog, but one of the gubernatorial candidates in Texas, his education plan is to increase the funding for TEA by $3 million, and that $3 million is going to be an additional appropriation for Teach for America.
I know
this is very discouraging, particularly as the kids in high-poverty minority schools do need the most experienced teachers, not those who come to teach for a while.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you very much for that, Karen from Houston.
Sure.
Well, I knew about what you just said about increasing the budget for Teach for America. That's happening in Arizona, is happening in other states where, and in New York, the latest,
mm-hmm.
you know about Cuomo and
mm-hmm.
his declaration to support charter schools over public schools by changing laws and creating new laws that definitely favors charter schools over public schools.
Well, this is an important relationship to talk about with Teach for America and charter schools. At 1/3 of all Teach for America's new core members go to charter schools each year. And so you might ask yourself, why is it that 1/3 of their teachers go to charter schools? The reason why is because a Teach for America core member has to take the first offer on the table, the very first offer. It doesn't matter what that offer is. So the offer can be $10,000 below what the local district is paying, but a Teach for America core member is required to take the very first offer, no matter what it is. And so charter schools, there's been documentation of this by Beth Sundell and some others in peer review work, which is that charters, they won't open unless they have access to this cheap labor that Teach for America is providing to them. There's documentation of this. And so that's why the charter movement and Teach for America are so intertwined, is because of this requirement that Teach for America core members have to go work for these charters for whatever the offer is.
Well, let's back up a step on that. Again, going back to Wendy, one of her associates who went through her program went out and established his own charter school that morphed into a network of charter schools.
Which
many
one? There's many of them.
KIPP, the KIPP, Knowledge
KIPP.
Power. Yeah, you know him? And
yes.
You want to talk about that, but no, let's stay on track, Julian. Let's stay on track.
Okay.
But many, many of the alumni of Teach for America have gone on to start their own charter program.
Right.
They're all, and they then hire only Teach for America. The people become principals. They run these charter schools. They run. They become more like superintendents, where they run a network of charter schools. But it's all sort of like an in-house thing, an extension of Teach for America becoming what it's teaching. Private charter schools that becomes a pipeline for Teach for America to shovel their students, would-be teachers, into employment that support Teach for America needing more students to go out to more schools and et cetera. So this part of understanding what, when we say Teach for America, what it is. We talked about its founder. We've talked about its philosophy. We need to go a little bit more into the model itself so that when we talk about other aspects, audience will have a background sufficient to understand that dot and its connection to other dots.
Well, let me, let's go there, but let me first make two quick comments about KIPP. The first is, you know, that Mike Feinberg, who's one of the founders with Levin of the KIPP network of schools, and I have mixed feelings about KIPP. I don't have mixed feelings, for example, about KIPPs in D.C. that would put students that they wanted to discipline in padded rooms. Those are things that I don't have mixed feelings about. But I think there are some positive things about KIPP, but I also think that there's some very serious issues with KIPP. You know, very graciously, Mike Feinberg sat down with me for an interview and took every hard question that I asked him. And you can see that on my blog, Poking Inequity. Just search for Mike Feinberg, and you can see that post. I asked him a lot of hard questions. This wasn't a Barbara Walters interview. There was no softball questions in this interview. But one of the questions I asked him was about, you know, the hiring of Teach for America teachers. And I'm well aware that KIPP hires a lot of Teach for America teachers. So if there was a question that Mike Feinberg hedged on, I would say that was the one. You know, how do you determine if you're going to hire Teach for America teachers? But one of the really real things that Mike Feinberg did say is I asked him, I said, well, what do you think about Teach America teachers who have taught 2 years and now want to be involved with the education reform and policy discussion? What do you think about that? And when he responded to that, so, you know, after 2 years, you're an expert on education is essentially the question I was asking him. And what he said was, when they leave the room, we laugh at them, which is that he doesn't think that, you know, after 2 years of teaching in Teach for America, that you're ready to have important discussions about education reform. I think the other story I want to tell about KIPP and Teach for America is that about 3 years ago, I had a student, one of my students, who her honors thesis, I chaired her honors thesis as an undergraduate. She came, and her honors thesis was actually about KIPP. And she came, and she told me that she wanted to go to KIPP and do Teach for America. I warned her, you know, I gave her all of the research that we've been working on about KIPP and Teach for America. And it was something that she really wanted to do. Well, in December, here she got back in contact with me about her experience at KIPP and her experience as a Teach for America core member in San Antonio, Texas. And she summed up her experience with the words isolation, shame, and burnout. That her experience was, her 5 weeks of summer training was not enough to prepare her for what she was going to face as a Teach for America core member in KIPP in San Antonio. So I would also, you know, invite you to go to my blog and read that. Just do a search for isolation, shame, and burnout. And you can hear the story of my former student who was a TFA teacher at a KIPP from San Antonio.
Now, you know me well enough to know that I have already done that.
Okay.
That's why I wanted you to co-host this series of Teach for America, because
okay.
of your vast experience as a professor, as a researcher, and as a practitioner. So,
sure.
yes. In fact, I'm hoping that some of the people that you have talked to previously before going into Teach for America, after having gone into Teach for America, after having exited Teach for America, that hopefully we will get some of those people sometime through this series to call in and share their experience about Teach for America. But
that's a good idea. You know, I can, for the next show, I will reach out to some of those folks and see if we can get them to call in.
That's exactly what I was hoping for, that in the second show we will be able to do that, and that we will prepare our audience again for what's to come. Let me just go back and summarize and try to pull a couple of dots together. We're talking about an organization, Teach for America, that supposedly the concept for this program came to her in some great epiphany in her senior year at Princeton. She was not an ed major, had no interest in education, but she came up with this idea of how to fix the broken public education system in America. The model was based upon supposedly the Peace Corps model, where you volunteer for 2 years of service. She would train her people for 5 weeks, and then, I'm using the word, dump them into some of the hard-pressed areas in America in terms of education, into school systems where states have cut budgets, have devastated public education, and acted as if poverty and underfunding have absolutely nothing to do with educating a person and giving a person a quality education, and that its failure is pretty much the result of bad veteran teachers. Her program was going to bring in the best, the brightest, make it possible for districts to get rid of veteran teachers, and mostly, because it was an urban area, teachers of color, and replace them with these shining lights that come out of the Ivies, the best and the brightest, and that they, in their 2 years, would eradicate any possible effect that poverty would have on a person's learning, any ill effects that veteran teachers would have had on their lack of learning, and turn everything around. That was the model. It was, but it was not stated that this was a business model. This was a out-and-out, straight corporate business model. You mentioned Taylorism on your first visit to the show. This was Taylorism personified. Now,
mm-hmm.
we have some dots here that hopefully we will be able to connect on this show and then in the future. But let me
mm-hmm.
ask you this question. Having covered what we covered, what or when in your experience did you begin to see Teach for America as a harboring of ill will to come? I'm trying to be very diplomatic in that statement.
So first let me just say that, you know, I don't consider myself a critic of Teach for America. I really don't. And, you know, I had an off-the-record lunch with Eliza Villanueva Beard several months back, And, you know, I'm a policy analyst. That's what I do. That's what I'm trained to do. I'm trained to look at the data and make assessments of the data, make policy recommendations. And the evidence on Teach for America, which is a much longer discussion, is just not convincing. And what we really need for our hard-to-staff schools, because Teach America at the same time is cheap and it's expensive. In the short term, it's a cheaper alternative. In the long term, there are costs to society, whether they be pecuniary or non-pecuniary. So, you know, and I should say that my cousin, Manuel Cadena, actually was a Teacher America teacher years ago in the 1990s. So my first exposure to Teach for America was actually very positive, because my cousin he went to MIT, and he was a Teach for America teacher in New York City. Unfortunately, my cousin passed away suddenly while he was teaching on a weekend, so he's no longer with us. But so I had a very positive. But you know, when I was in graduate school, you know, we conducted an analysis on Houston data of Teacher America, and what that study looked at was Teacher America teachers compared to other alternative pathway teachers compared to certified teachers. And that study showed that certified teachers just perform better than Teacher America teachers. The good news in that study, which Teacher America, you know, or good news for Teacher America, is their teachers perform better than other alternative certified teachers. But to sort of illustrate what that sort of statistical study showed, let me just give you an example. I basically live at the Austin airport. I feel like I need my own room there just so that I can just get on and off airplanes. But when you go to the airport, if they tell me you have three options, okay, the first flight, the plane's pilot has 30 hours of training flying that plane, which is, you know, an alt-cert teacher in Texas. That's all they need before they can start teaching, 30 hours online or whatever. The next pilot has 5 weeks of training, and then the final pilot is certified to fly that plane and has been flying for a year, like a traditionally trained university teacher. Well, what plane would you take? The thing is that in our hard-to-staff schools, they don't have the choice of that third teacher. They only have the choice of the teachers who have 30 hours of training, which 60% of all teachers now in Texas are alternative certified, alternative pathway, or the Teach for America teacher who has 5 weeks. So that study suggested that you should take the Teach for America teachers over the other alt-certs. A place like Houston draws from 100 different programs, alt-programs. But if you have the choice only between bad and worse, I'm going to take bad. But what our high poverty schools should have the choice of is good. The pilots that are certified, the teachers that are certified to pilot those classrooms. So I'm hearing in my ear that we have a caller. So let me just stop there.
We do. Okay, caller, are you there?
Hi. Hey, yes.
How are you, sir?
Hi, good. Yeah, my name is Chad Summer. I'm calling in from Chicago. I'm a 2011 Teach for America Corps member. However, I did my 2 years teaching, but I'm no longer teaching.
So tell us a little bit about your experience, Chad.
Well, you know, I originally signed up for or applied to Teach for America because the whole social justice mission of the organization appealed to me. I had been working as a development manager for a nonprofit social service agency in Chicago that specializes in what's called the community school movement, which is a really a positive intervention or effort to try to take urban schools and turn them into community centers to provide for, you know, various wraparound services for students from challenging backgrounds. And so After working at that organization for about 5 years doing fundraising and development, I wanted to get a little bit more in the actual mission work of the organization. But rather than go back to university to become a social worker or a counselor, I thought, oh, maybe I could teach. And I was aware of Teach for America, and their marketing message it really appealed to me, because it was all about closing the achievement gap and helping to provide educational interventions for high need students. So the mission of the organization really appealed to me. After being in the organization, I saw very quickly how, at least in Chicago, Teach for America has basically been turned into a temp agency for charter schools. The majority of Teach for America teachers in Chicago are placed at charter schools. There's a policy that I wrote an article that was published by Edgy Scheister, and then it was picked up by Salon.com, that points out that there's a policy at Teach for America where you have to take the first job that you're offered. Now, on the surface, that seems to make sense, because they have hundreds of young people, who are probably new to a certain city, and they don't want a bunch of infighting of, I don't want to go to this school and I don't want to go to that school, et cetera, et cetera. But how that policy is exploited by the charter schools is the charter schools just offer the Teach for America recruits a job at salaries that are, upwards of 30% below base union scale. So the charter schools are now able to get a cheap temporary workforce that they can just churn through every 2 years. And I had another guy that was in my cohort told me that that his principal actually told him, I have you for 2 years, and I'm going to work you to death, and I'll burn you out, and in 2 years I'll have somebody else to take your place. So the organization is being exploited by charter schools to provide cheap labor, and it's just deprofessionalizing the teaching profession.
Wow. Are you there, James?
I'm there. I was waiting for you to say something, because I want to tell our caller, I know you in that I read your article on Edgesite. Follow that blog, and I file all the articles there. And when you said the very beginning, I knew exactly who you were. Thank you for calling in. I'm really, really, I got a big smile on my face, because I read the article, I understood it, I agreed with it. Your experience was so very typical of many of other people who have come out and had something to say about their experience with Teach for America. And you're giving our audience a firsthand account, so that I don't have to be the one who makes all of these points, or Julian has to be the one to make all this point. I appreciate that very much. I really do.
Yeah, sure. Let me say two other things about Chad. One, at the Network for Public Education conference that we had here in Austin a couple of months ago, we convened a panel on Teach for America, and Chad was one of several Teach for America alums. The entire panel was Teach for America alums, sort of talking about the current direction of Teach for America and thinking about how we can reform that reform. The other thing is that Chad wrote an excellent piece for Cloaking Inequity about how to have a conversation with someone from Teach for America. Because the thing is that Teach for America has several very predictable talking points. So anytime you have a conversation with someone from the organization, there are several very predictable things that they will say. And so Chad so eloquently, it's called a primer for a conversation with Teach for America. And Chad sort of goes through each of the sort of very common talking points that they have. And I don't want to put Chad on the spot, but one of the things that I always want conversations to be productive, because of course I'm trained as a policy analyst, which is how do we improve the policies. I'm not the person that thinks that Teach for America should be shut down. I'm the person that thinks that Teach for America should be reformed. And how can we make Teach for America something that is a net positive for society? So, Chad, what do you think, you know, and we've talked about this in personal conversations, what do you think are some of the places where Teach for America can improve based on your experiences and your conversations with other alums?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, on the positive side, Teach for America is getting bright, motivated, hardworking young people interested in the issue of trying to improve education. So that is not a bad thing. I mean, that's a positive thing. The problem is it's served up in a manner of, you can go out and improve education for 2 years and then go on and get on with your real life. But the problem with that is we all know and the data is out there that, you know, teachers that are really the best teachers are not, you know, teachers that are first and second year teachers. They're teachers who have experience and have been doing, teaching takes a while to hone the craft. So to, you know, promote that there's some type of solution to the academic achievement gap that can be, you know, solved by just some hardworking, motivated young people who teach for 2 years is, the reality of the situation doesn't back that up. So you can start from the positive side, which is Teach for America is getting people who may not necessarily have been interested in this issue, they get them interested. The problem is the claim that a few weeks training is going to, make you good. It is going to make you this great teacher that can actually solve these problems. So I think we saw last year. I think there was a lot of articles came out, and there was a lot of press critical of Teach for America that I think was rather new. It felt like there was an avalanche of critical press last year. So
let me poke in here real quick, and then let you keep going. Which is that, every year when school starts, I'll get calls from the press that, they've written this glowing article about Teach for America. And I think for the first time this last year, the press has started to think more critically about Teach for America. They're starting to pay attention to the data and the research and the alumni's critiques of Teach for America. I think Chad is right on the money. And honestly, I think the press is paying attention to a lot of things more critically, more recently. I don't know if you all have noticed this, whether it be charters or vouchers or Arne Duncan. I think the press has been a lot more critical of a lot of these sort of different education reforms. Not as much as they could be or should be, but I do think that the press has been doing a much better job covering Teach for America, amongst other things.
Gentlemen, our time is running out.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to step in and take the last 2 minutes of the show. Chad,
no problem.
I would love for you to, one, continue listening to the show, because we're going to hit all the major issues about what I call the war on public education. We're going to do Common Core, charter schools. I'm going to talk about individual organizations, Alex, and et cetera. So I hope you will come back and be with us. Secondly, when we come back to do the next part of the series on Teach for America, I certainly hope that you will be here and make a call to us, and et cetera. Now, having listened to both of you, I am a critic of Teach for America.
Okay.
The question that you raised, Julian, in terms of looking as a policy analyst, looking for the good, and et cetera, that is a question that I have for us to deal with in the next issue of this show, or maybe the third, if we do a third. And that question deals with, I think Teach for America is a clear and present danger to public education and that part of the public which public education serves. That's my point of view, personally and professionally. And the question that I have, and that you sort of like just touched on a minute ago, is that Teach for America has come from an idea in one person's head to a juggernaut now, worth almost $500 million in terms of net assets. We didn't get into that. It's a corporate elite weapon, in my view, to destroy public education and make possible the erection of privatized education in America and globally. We'll get into that hopefully later. So, with that in mind, and our time being out, I had written earlier when I read about Wendy not being able to get a job in her chosen field and decided, well, hell, I'll go to education. That reminded me of the statement that you all are familiar with, and that is, those who can do, those who can't teach. Think about that. I'll come back next time we're on this topic, and I'll explore what I just said in more detail and what it meant to me when I came up with this idea. One last statement. There's a song that also came to mind just about an hour before the show came on air by Ella Fitzgerald. And the song, I'm laughing here, but this song is called Let's Do It. Let's Fall in Love. I don't know why I thought about that song. I'm not a jazz person. I just know about it probably through my parents. But when I thought about it, I thought Wendy again. Her thing is, let's do it. Instead of let's fall in love, let's invade public education and become major players in the future of public education. With that, I'm going to sign off. Julian, we are going to be back when you are available, hopefully in the next few weeks. Chad, hopefully you're still there. You will be back, and others will come back as we get more into Teach for America. And my view that Teach for America is a Trojan horse in the war to destroy public education and to erect corporate, state, elite, privatized education. You guys may not agree with me, that's what I'm going to provide in the conversation. With that, thanks everyone for tuning in, and hopefully, we will be talking to Dr. Lois Wiener again. She will be in England at a conference put on by Teacher Solidarity, an international organization that is fighting tooth and nail to save public education globally. This will be, if we can pull this off, this will be a first. With that, have a good evening, everyone.
Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.